They will raise me up in glory, and I will rule the abysses between worlds and the spaces between all the stars.
And he shall rule them with a rod of iron, said Clary, remembering Alec's words in the Accords Hall. And I will give him the morning star.
Sebastian whirled on her, his eyes bright.
Yes, he said. Yes, very good. You are understanding now.
I thought I wanted our world, to bring it down in blood. But I want more than that. I want the legacy of the Morgenstern name.
You want to be the devil? Clary said, half baffled and half terrified. You want to rule hell? She spread her hands out. Go ahead, then, she said. None of us will stop you. Let us go home. Promise you'll leave our world alone and you can have hell.
Alas, said Sebastian, for I have discovered one other thing that perhaps sets me apart from Lucifer. I do not want to rule alone.
He extended his arm, an elegant gesture, and indicated the two great thrones on the dais.
One of those is for me, and the other is for you.
The streets of Alicante turned and twisted back in on themselves like the currents of a sea. If Emma hadn't been following Helen, who was carrying a witchlight in one hand and her crossbow in the other, she would have been hopelessly lost. The last of the sun was vanishing from the sky and the streets were dark. Julian was carrying Tavi, the baby's arms locked around his neck. Emma held Drew by the hand and the twins clung together in silence. Drew wasn't fast and kept stumbling. She fell several times and Emma had to drag her to her feet. Jules called out to Emma to be careful, and she was trying to be careful. She couldn't imagine how Julian did it, holding Tavi so carefully, murmuring so reassuringly that the little boy didn't even cry. Drew was sobbing silently. Emma brushed the tears off the younger girl's cheeks as she helped her up for the fourth time, murmuring nonsense comforting words the way her mother once had to her when she had been a child and had fallen. She had never missed her parents more agonizingly than she did now. It felt like a knife under her ribs. "Drew," she began, and the sky lit up red. The demon towers had flamed to the color of pure scarlet, all the gold of warning gone. "The city walls are broken," Helen said, staring up at the guard. Emma knew she was thinking about Aline. The red glow of the towers turned her pale hair the color of blood. "Come on, quickly." Emma wasn't sure if they could go any more quickly. She got a tighter hold of Drusilla's wrist and yanked the little girl nearly off her feet, muttering apologies as she went. The twins, hand in hand, were faster, even as they raced up a jagged set of stairs towards Angel Square, led by Helen. They were almost at the top step when Julian gasped out, "Helen, behind us!" And Emma spun around to see a fairy knight in white armor approaching the foot of the stairs. He carried a bow made from a curved branch, and his hair was long and bark-colored. For a moment, his eyes met Helen's. The expression on his face changed, and Emma couldn't help wondering if he recognized the fair folk in her blood. And then Helen raised her right arm and shot her crossbow directly at him. He whirled away. The bolt hit the wall behind him. The fairy smirked and leaped up the first step, then the second, and screamed. Emma watched in shock as his legs buckled under him. He fell and howled as his skin came into contact with the edge of the step. For the first time, Emma noticed that corkscrews, nails, and other hunks of cold-forged iron had been hammered into the step edges. The fairy warrior reeled back, and Helen shot again. The bolt went through his armor and into his chest. He crumpled. "They fairy-proofed," Emma said, remembering looking out the window at the Penhallows with Ty and Helen. "All the metal, the iron." She pointed at a nearby building where a long row of scissors hung from cords connected to the edge of the roof. "That's what the guards were doing." Suddenly, Drew shrieked. Another figure raced up the street, a second fairy knight, this one a woman with an armor of pale green carrying a shield of overlapping carved leaves. Emma whipped a knife from her belt and threw it. Instinctively, the fairy raised her shield to block the knife, which sailed past her head and severed the cord holding a pair of scissors to the roof above. The scissors fell, blade first, and plunged between the fairy woman's shoulders. She fell to the ground with a shriek, her body spasming. "Good job, Emma," said Helen in a hard voice. "Come on, all of you." She broke off with a cry as three Andarkens surged from a side street. They wore the red gear that had appeared so often in Emma's nightmares, dyed even redder by the light from the demon towers. The children were silent as ghosts. Helen raised her crossbow and shot a bolt. It struck one of the Indarkened in the shoulder, and he spun away, staggering but not falling. She fumbled to reload the bow. Julian struggled to hold Tavi while reaching for the blade at his side. Emma put her hand on Cortana. A spinning circle of light hurtled through the air and buried itself in the throat of the first Indarkened, blood spattering the wall behind him. He clawed at his throat once and fell. Two more circles flew, one after the other, and sliced into the chests of the other Dark Nephilim. They crumpled silently, more blood spreading in a pool along the cobblestones. Emma whirled and looked up. Someone stood at the top of the stairs, a young shadow hunter with dark hair, a gleaming chakram still in his right hand. Several others were hooked to his weapons belt. In the red light of the demon towers he seemed to glow, a tall, thin figure in dark gear against the darker black of night, the Accords Hall rising like a pale moon behind him. "Brother Zachariah," said Helen in amazement.
"What's going on?" Magnus asked hoarsely. He was no longer able to sit up, and was lying half-propped on his elbows on the floor of the cell. Luke was standing with his face pressed to the arrow-slit window. His shoulders were tense, and he'd barely moved since the first screams and shouting had begun. "Light," Luke said finally. "There's some kind of light pouring out of the keep. It's burning the mist away. I can see the plateau down below, and some of the Indarkened running around. I just don't know what's caused it." Magnus laughed under his breath and tasted metal in his mouth. "Come on. Who do you think?" Luke looked at him. "The Clave?" "The Clave," Magnus said. "I hate to break it to you, but they don't care enough about us to come here." He tipped his head back. He felt worse than he could remember ever feeling. Well, maybe not ever. There had been the incident with the rats in the quicksand around the turn of the century. "Your daughter, though," he said. "She does." Luke looked horrified. "Clary? No, she couldn't be here." "Isn't she always where she isn't supposed to be?" Magnus said in a reasonable voice. At least he thought he sounded reasonable. It was hard to tell when he felt so dizzy. "And the rest of them, her constant companions. My—" The door burst open. Magnus tried to sit up, couldn't, and fell back onto his elbows. He felt a dull sense of annoyance. If Sebastian had come to kill them, he'd rather die on his feet than his elbows. He heard voices, Luke exclaiming, and then others, and then a face swam into view, hovering over his, eyes like stars in a pale sky. Magnus exhaled. For a moment he no longer felt ill, or afraid of dying, or even angry or bitter. Relief washed over him, as profound as sorrow, and he reached up to brush the cheek of the boy leaning over him with the back of his bruised knuckles. Alec's eyes were huge and blue and full of anguish.
"Oh, my Alec," he said. "You've been so sad. I didn't know."
As they forged their way farther into the center of the city, the crowd thickened. More Nephilim, more Indarkened, more fairy warriors. Though the fairies moved sluggishly, painfully, many of them weakened by contact with the iron, steel, rowan wood, and salt that had been liberally deployed around the city as protection against them. The might of fairy soldiers was legendary, but Emma saw many of them, who might otherwise have been victorious, fall beneath the flashing swords of the Nephilim, their blood running across the white flagstones of Angel Square. The Indarkened, however, were not weakened. They seemed unconcerned with the troubles of their fairy companions, hacking and slashing their way through the Nephilim jamming Angel Square. Julian had Tavi zipped into his jacket. The little boy was screaming now, his cries lost among the shrieks of battle. "We have to stop," Julian shouted. "We're going to be separated. Helen!" Helen was pale and ill-looking. The closer they got to the Hall of Accords now looming above them, the thicker the clusters of fairy protection spells were. Even Helen, with her partial heritage, was beginning to feel it. It was Brother Zachariah, just Zachariah now, Emma reminded herself, just a shadow hunter like they were, in the end, who moved to fashion them all into a line. Blackthorns and Carstairs, everyone hand in hand. Emma hung on to Julian's belt since his other hand was supporting Tavi. Even Ty was forced to hold hands with Drusilla, though he scowled at her when he did, bringing fresh tears to her eyes. They made their way toward the hall, clinging together, Zachariah in front of them. He was out of throwing blades and had taken out a long-bladed spear. He swept the crowd with it as they went, efficiently and icily hacking a pathway through the undarkened. Emma burned to seize Cortana out of its scabbard, to run forward and stab and slash at the enemies who had murdered her parents, who had tortured and turned Julian's father, who had taken Mark away from them. But that would have meant letting go of Julian and Livy, and that she would not do. She owed the Blackthorns too much, Jules especially, Jules who had kept her alive, who had brought her Cortana when she had thought she would die of grief. Finally, they stumbled up the front steps of the hall behind Helen and Zachariah, and reached the massive double doors of the entryway. There was a guard on either side, one holding an enormous wooden bar. Emma recognized one of them as the woman with the koi tattoo who sometimes spoke out in meetings, Diana Rayburn.
"We're about to shut the doors," said the one holding the bar. "You two, you're going to have to leave them here. Only children are allowed inside."
"Helen?" said Drew in a trembling little voice. The line broke into pieces then, with the Blackthorn children swarming Helen, Julian standing a little aside, his face blank and ashen, his free hand stroking Tavi's curls. "It's all right," Helen was saying in a choked voice. "This is the safest place in Alicante. Look, there's salt and grave dirt all up and down the steps to keep the fairies out."
"And cold iron under the flagstones," said Diana. The instructions of the spiral labyrinth were followed to the letter. At the mention of the spiral labyrinth, Zachariah took a sharp breath and knelt down, bringing his eyes on a level with Emma's.
"Emma Cordelia Carstairs," he said.
He looked both very young and very old at the same time. There was blood at his throat where his faded rune stood out, but it wasn't his. He seemed to be searching her face, though for what she couldn't tell.
"Stay with your parabatai," he said finally, so quietly that no one else could hear them. "Sometimes it's braver not to fight. Protect them and save your vengeance for another day."
Emma felt her eyes widen.
"But I don't have a parabatai, and how did you..."
One of the guards cried out and fell, a red-fletched arrow in his chest.
"Get inside," shouted Diana, seizing hold of the children and half throwing them into the hall. Emma felt herself caught and tossed inside. She spun to get one last look at Zachariah and Helen, but it was too late. The double doors had slammed shut after her, the massive wooden latch falling into place with a sound of echoing finality.
"No," Clary said, looking from the terrifying throne to Sebastian and back again. "Blank your mind," she told herself. "Focus on Sebastian, on what's happening here, on what you can do to stop him. Don't think about Jace." "You must know I won't stay here. Maybe you'd rather rule hell than serve in heaven, but I don't want either. I just want to go home and live my life." "That isn't possible. I've already sealed the pathway that brought you here. No one can return through it. All that's left is this here." He gestured to the window. "And in a short time, that will be sealed too. There will be no returning home, not for you. You belong here, with me." "Why?" she whispered. "Why me?" "Because I love you," Sebastian said. He looked uncomfortable, tense and strained, as if he were reaching for something he couldn't quite touch. "I don't want you hurt."
"You don't... You have hurt me. You tried to..."
"It doesn't matter if I hurt you," he said. "Because you belong to me. I can do what I want with you. But I don't want other people touching you, or owning you, or hurting you. I want you to be around, to admire me, and to see what I've done, what I've accomplished. That's love, isn't it?" "No," Clary said, in a soft, sad voice. "No, it isn't." She took a step toward him, and her boot knocked against the invisible force field of his circle of runes. She could go no farther. "If you love someone, then you want them to love you back." Sebastian's eyes narrowed. Don't patronize me. I know what you think love is, Clarissa. I happen to think you're wrong. You will ascend the throne, and you will reign beside me. You have a dark heart in you, and it is a darkness we share. When I am all there is in your world, when I am all that is left, you will love me back. I don't understand. I can't imagine you would. Sebastian smirked. You aren't exactly in possession of all the information. Let me guess. You know nothing of what's happened in Alicante since you departed. A cold feeling began to spread in Clary's stomach. We're in another dimension, she said. There's no way to know. Not exactly, said Sebastian, and his voice was rich with delight, as if she had fallen into precisely the trap he had wanted. Look into the window above the eastern throne. Look, and see Alicante now. Clary looked. When she had come into the room, she had seen only what seemed like the starred night sky through the eastern window. But now, as she concentrated, the surface of the glass shimmered and rippled. She thought of the story of Snow White suddenly, the magic mirror, its surface shimmering and changing to reveal the outside world. She was looking at the inside of the Accords Hall. It was full of children. Shadowhunter children sat and stood and clung together. There were the Blackthorns, the children huddled tightly in a group. Julian, sitting with the baby on his lap. His free arm stretched out, as if he could encompass the rest of his siblings, could pull them all in and protect them. Emma sat close by him, her expression stony, her golden sword gleaming behind her shoulder. The scene resolved into Angel Square. All around the Hall of Accords was a boiling mass of Nephilim, and ranged against them were the Undarkened in their scarlet gear, bristling with weapons. And not just the Undarkened, but figures that Clary recognized with a sinking heart as fairy warriors. A tall fairy with hair of mixed blue and green strands was battling Aline Penhallow, who stood in front of her mother, her sword drawn as if ready to fight to the death. Across the square was Helen, trying to push her way through the crowd toward Aline. But the crush was too great. The fighting penned her back. But so did the bodies. Bodies of Nephilim warriors, fallen and dying. So many more in black gear than red. They were losing the battle. Losing it. Clary whirled on Sebastian as the scene began to fade. What's happening? It's over, he said. I requested that the Clave turn you over to me. They didn't. Admittedly, because you'd run off. But nevertheless, they were of no further use to me. My forces have invaded the city. The Nephilim children are hiding in the Accords Hall. But when all the others are dead, the hall will be taken. Alicante will be mine. All of Idris will be mine. The Shadowhunters have lost the war. Not that there was much of one. I really thought that they'd put up more of a fight. That's hardly all the Shadowhunters that exist, Clary said. That was just who was in Alicante. There are still Nephilim scattered all over the world. All the Shadowhunters you see there will drink from the infernal cup soon enough. Then they will be my servants, and I will send them out to find their brethren in the world. And those who remain will be turned or killed. I will slay the Iron Sisters and the Silent Brothers in their citadels of stone and silence. Inside of a month, the race of Jonathan Shadowhunter will be wiped from the world. And then, he smiled a terrible smile and gestured toward the western window, which looked out on the dead and blasted world of Edom. You've seen what happens to a world without protectors, he gloated. Your world will die. Death on death, and blood in the streets. Clary thought of Magnus. I saw a city all of blood, with towers made of bone, and blood ran in the streets like water. You can't imagine, she said in a dead voice, that if you do this, if what you're telling me is going to happen does actually happen, that there is any chance I would sit on a throne beside you. I'd rather be tortured to death. Oh, I don't think it, he said breezily. That's why I've waited, you see, to give you a choice. All those fair folk who are my allies, all the Indargand you see there, they wait on my orders. If I give the signal, they will stand down. Your world will be safe. You'll never be able to return there, of course. I'll seal the borders between this world and that, and never again will anyone, demon or human, travel between them. But it will be safe.
A choice, Clary said. You said you were giving me a choice.
Of course, he said. Rule beside me, and I will spare your world.
Refuse,
and I will give the order to annihilate it.
Choose me, and you can save millions, billions of lives, my sister.
You could save a whole world by damning a single soul, your own. So tell me, what is your decision?
Magnus, Alex said desperately, reaching to feel the Adamus chains sunk deep into the floor that connected to the manacles on the warlock's wrists.
Are you all right? Are you hurt?
Isabel and Simon were checking Luke for injuries. Isabel kept glancing back at Alec, her face anxious. Alec deliberately didn't meet her gaze, not wanting her to see the fear in his eyes. He touched the back of his hand to Magnus's face. Magnus looked sunken and sallow, his lips dry, ashy shadows beneath his eyes.
"My Alec," Magnus had said. "You've been so sad. I didn't know."
And then he had sunk back against the floor, as if the effort of speaking exhausted him.
"Hold still,"
Alec said now, and drew a seraph blade from his belt. He opened his mouth to name it and felt a sudden touch at his wrist. Magnus had wrapped his slender fingers around Alec's wrist.
"Call it Raphael," Magnus said.
And when Alec looked at him in puzzlement, Magnus glanced toward the blade in Alec's hand. His eyes were half closed, and Alec remembered what Sebastian had said in the entryway to Simon.
"I killed the one who made you."
Magnus's mouth quirked at the corner.
"It is an angel's name," he said.
Alec nodded.
"Raphael,"
he said softly. And when the blade blazed up, he brought it down hard on the Adamus chain, which splintered under the touch of the knife. The chains fell away, and Alec, dropping the blade to the floor, reached forward to take Magnus by the shoulders and help him up. Magnus reached for Alec, but instead of rising to his feet, he pulled Alec against him, his hand sliding up Alec's back to knot in his hair. Magnus pulled Alec down and against him and kissed him, hard and awkward and determined, and Alec froze for a moment and then abandoned himself to it, to kissing Magnus. Something he thought he'd never get to do again. Alec ran his hands up Magnus's shoulders to the sides of his neck and cupped his hands there, holding Magnus in place while he kissed him thoroughly, breathless. Finally, Magnus drew back. His eyes were shining. He let his head fall onto Alec's shoulder, arms encircling him, keeping them tightly together.
"Alec," he began softly.
"Yes," Alec said, desperate to know what Magnus wanted to ask him.
"Are you being chased?"
"Some of the Indarkand are looking for us," Alec said carefully.
"Pity," Magnus said, closing his eyes again. "It would be nice if you could just lie down with me here, just for a little while."
"Well, you can't," said Isabel, not unkindly. "We have to get out of here. The Indarkand will be here any second, and we've got what we came for."
"Jocelyn." Luke drew away from the wall, straightening up.
"You're forgetting Jocelyn."
Isabel opened her mouth, then closed it again.
"You're right," she said.
Her hand went to her weapons belt, and she unfastened a sword. Taking a step across the room, she handed it to Luke, then bent down to pick up Alec's still-burning seraph blade. Luke took the sword and held it with the careless competence of someone who had handled blades all their life. Sometimes it was hard for Alec to remember that Luke had been a shadow hunter once, but he remembered now.
"Can you stand?" Alec said to Magnus gently,
and Magnus nodded and let Alec lift him to his feet.
He lasted almost 10 seconds before his knees buckled and he collapsed forward, coughing.
Magnus!
Alec exclaimed, and threw himself down by the warlock's side. But Magnus waved him away and struggled up to his knees.
You should go without me, he said,
in a voice made gravelly by hoarseness.
I'll slow you down.
I don't understand.
Alec felt as if a vice were compressing his heart.
What happened? What did he do to you?
Magnus shook his head. It was Luke who answered.
This dimension is killing Magnus, he said, voice flat. There's something about it, about his father, that's destroying him.
Alec glanced at Magnus, but Magnus only shook his head again. Alec fought down an irrational burst of anger.
Still withholding things, even now.
And took a deep breath.
The rest of you go find Jocelyn, he said. I'll stay with Magnus. We'll head toward the center of the keep. When you find her, come looking for us there.
Isabel looked wretched.
Alec. Please, Izzy, said Alec,
and he saw Simon put his hand on Isabel's back and whisper something into her ear. She nodded, finally, and turned toward the door. Luke and Simon followed her, both pausing to look back at Alec before they went, but it was the image of Izzy that stuck in his mind, carrying her blazing seraph blade in front of her like a star.
Here, he said to Magnus as gently as he could, and reached down to lift him up.
Magnus stumbled to his feet, and Alec managed to get one of the warlock's long arms slung over his shoulder. Magnus was thinner than he had ever been. His shirt clung to his ribs, and the spaces under his cheekbones looked sunken. But there was still a lot of warlock to contend with, a lot of skinny arms and legs and long bony spine.
Hold on to me, Alec said,
and Magnus gave him the sort of smile that made Alec feel like someone had taken an apple corer to his heart and tried to dig out the center.
I always do, Alexander, he said. I always do.
The baby had fallen asleep in Julian's lap. He was holding Tavi tightly, carefully, great dark hollows under his eyes. Libby and Ty were huddled together on one side of him, Drew curled against him on the other. Emma sat behind him, her back against his, giving him something to lean on to balance the weight of the baby. There were no free pillars to sit against, no bare space of wall. Dozens, hundreds of children were prisoned in the hall. Emma leaned her head back against Jules's. He smelled the way he always did, soap, sweat, and the tang of ocean, as if he carried it in his veins. It was comforting and not comforting in its familiarity. I hear something, she whispered. Do you? Julian's eyes flicked immediately to his brothers and sisters. Livy was half asleep, her chin propped on her hand. Drew was looking all over the room, her big blue-green eyes taking everything in. Ty was tapping his finger against the marble floor, obsessively counting from 1 to 100 and backward again. He had kicked and screamed when Julian had tried to look at a welt on his arm where he had fallen. Jules had let it go and allowed Ty to go back to his counting and rocking. It soothed him to quietness, which was what mattered. What do you hear? Jules asked, and Emma's head fell back then as the sound rose, a sound like a great wind or the crackle of a massive bonfire. People started to move and cry out, looking up at the glass ceiling of the hall. Through it, clouds were visible, moving across the face of the moon, and then from the clouds burst a wild assortment of riders, riders of black horses whose hooves were flame, riders of massive black dogs with orange burning eyes. More modern forms of transport were mixed in as well. Black carriages drawn by skeletal steeds, and motorcycles gleaming with chrome and bone and onyx. The wild hunt, Jules whispered. The wind was a living thing, whipping the clouds into peaks and valleys that the horsemen hurtled up and down, their cries audible even over the gale, their hands bristling with weapons, swords and maces and spears and crossbows. The front doors of the hall began to shake and tremble. The wooden bar that had been placed across them exploded into splinters. The Nephilim stared toward the doors with terrified eyes. Emma heard the voice of one of the guards among the crowd speaking in a harsh whisper. The Wild Hunt are chasing away our warriors outside the hall, she said. The Endarkrund are clearing away the iron and the grave dirt. They'll break down the doors if the guards don't get rid of them. The raging host has come, said Ty, breaking off his counting briefly. The gatherers of the dead. But the council protected the city against fairies, Emma protested. Why? They're not ordinary fairies.